I would add my welcome to what Darren already expressed. If you're visiting with us, we're certainly glad that you're here. It's good to be together as God's people under any circumstance. To be able to worship God is a great, great privilege. I'd like to begin by reading Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12. And as I read it, I'm sure that you, if you've not already done so, will recognize this great passage. Therefore, however you want people to treat you, so treat them. For this is the law and the prophets. That very familiar passage is often referred to as the golden rule. The golden rule. And as we think about that for a moment this morning, something familiar to us and yet so needed in our day. The question that comes to my mind is this: while we may be able to recite it, we may be very familiar with it, the question to ask is this something that people can see in us, something that we practice, rather than simply something that we can quote? And oh, how needed that is in our day. When you think about our society, wouldn't you agree with me that generous portions of this need to be applied to our world today? It's always in great demand and yet so often neglected. Our one basic problem as a people, as a society, has to do with how we treat one another. And Jesus simply said, treat others the way you want to be treated. Pretty simple advice, right? Build up one another in love. The contrast to that is seeking my own will first. Give me what I want. Treat me the way that I want to be treated. And following that path only destroys relationships, fosters indifference and strife, and causes polarization in society, in marriage, in relationships, and in the church. Building love is not a very mysterious thing. It's often very difficult to do, but it's not mysterious. Basically, it has to do with providing for the needs of others, looking to their needs emotionally, physically, spiritually, and trying to meet those needs is how we indeed build love and help people to feel love. Building love, then, is something we do, not something we say. It involves actions, not just feelings. So this morning, for just a few minutes, I want us to think about the golden rule and ask ourselves the question, why is it golden? Just because we say that it is? Why is it golden? And what makes it so important in everyday relationships? First of all, we would say that it's golden because of its scope. Because of its scope. Men have for many years tried to discover what it was like and how we should live and what our principles should be, and often have come close but not quite to the point that Jesus reached in this great sermon. Pittacus in the 5th or 6th century B.C. said, do not that to thy neighbor that thou wouldst not suffer from him. Kind of the King James language there. But a century later, it was Confucius who said, what you do not want others to do to you, do not do to others. Socrates in the 4th century B.C., thereabouts, said, do not do to others what angers you when, if done to you by others. You kind of get the flavor, don't you, of what he's talking about. In the day of Jesus, and just not that long before his coming to this earth, there were two primary schools of learning in Jerusalem. One was a more conservative, rigorous, stern school of Shammai, and the other was a more gentle and liberal school of Hillel. And in his book on the Sermon on the Mount, Leslie Thomas mentions a story, and I think it's just a story, but it could have been true, I guess. A heathen came to Shammai and said, I am ready to be received as a proselyte to your religion if you teach me the whole law while I stand on one foot. And you say, that's crazy. And apparently Shimei thought it was too. He drove him away as unworthy to be a student. He went over to Hillel and said the same thing. And Hillel answered him, what is hateful to yourself, do to no other. That is the whole law, and the rest is commentary. So he came up with the same philosophy as did these previous individuals like Confucius and Socrates and Pittacus and others. But basically, they all had the same idea. And it's really an idea that is of some importance, but it doesn't reach far enough. There was an old English toast that was sometimes used that is memorable. Toast went something like this. When we and ours have it in our power to do for you and yours what you and yours have done for us and ours, then we and ours will do for you and yours what you and yours have done for us and ours. Well, basically, this is a kind of a self-reciprocating kind of a toast. The idea is, I will do for you as soon as you do for me. Or I won't do to you if you won't do it to me, kind of thing. So what distinguishes Christ's principle, his golden rule, from these other statements? If you look closely at them, what you'll discover is that these other statements are primarily negative, and they're also passive. While Christ's statement is not only active, it is also very positive. The men of the ages said, do not do to others what you would not have them do unto you. And it does make a lot of sense. There's some good in that statement, but it doesn't measure up to the golden rule. You see, the statements that these others have made can also be applied in a self-oriented kind of way. For example, if we have been through the school of hard knocks often enough and long enough, we soon discover that being mean to other people doesn't pay. I hope you discover that someday. You probably already have. But the idea is that evil comes back to those who practice evil. I mean, it's kind of like people that can climb the corporate ladder, just squishing people and climb it over their back, and eventually they spend their time at the top looking back to see who's going to come and take over from them. Some people call it karma. I don't believe in karma, but that's the kind of philosophy that if you do bad, it's going to come back to you. Even Jesus said, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword, Matthew chapter number 26. It's the idea that that there are consequences in this life to how we treat other people. But if we treat other people nicely and with consideration, just because we don't want them to come back and hurt us, that's probably not the measure of what Jesus is talking about in this passage. So in the final analysis, that view is somewhat selfish. It's also somewhat passive. You hear someone describe a loved one, and often this is done in the context of the loved one having passed on from this life. And you hear him describe that person as, well, he never hurt anybody. She never did anything that hurt anybody else. And that's really a good thing to say. I would like for that to be said about me, wouldn't you? That you never hurt anybody? I mean, that sounds pretty good. But it doesn't say anything positive. It doesn't say, well, what did they do for anybody else? Not doing harm to others is good, but it's not a very adequate life principle. You got to go from that to something even better than that. Jesus at the judgment scene in Matthew 25, where it's depicted there, the sheep and the goats, and verses 42 and 43, he addressed the lost, those on the left, and he said, for I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I was naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Now look at that closely. What you'll find is that these people didn't do anything to hurt anybody. They just didn't do anything to help anybody. And for that reason, they were lost. Christians need to aim higher. In Matthew 5, in the Sermon on the Mount, in that beautiful section there. He talks about our relationship to God. He says, if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax gatherers do the same? If you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Now you apply that literally, or you can apply it figuratively and broaden the application here. But why should we only greet people that we know and care about and love? You know, just take it literally, if you would. Why would not Christians then treat the stranger on the street, or the person they meet in the store, or the person waiting on them at a restaurant with consideration and kindness and respect and love? However we want to be treated, that's how we want to treat them, right? And so if we're just in the mode of doing to others as they do unto us, if we're just in the mode of saying, well, I'm not going to hurt you if you don't hurt me, then we're just going to be only addressing and only being friendly to the people who are friendly to us. So it's passive. But Christian living is positive and active. God himself demonstrated that for us. Romans 5, verse 8. God demonstrates his own love toward us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. While we were yet sinners. God didn't do us any harm, and he could have sat there and said, well, I'm not going to harm them. I've already created them. I've already given them all of this. I'm just not going to hurt them. But neither am I going to do anything good for them. That's not the way that God did it. He showed his love by giving the life of his son on the cross for us. And we love because he first loved us. 1 John 4 and verse number 19. Our love is reciprocal. We learn to love by looking at the example of God. His love was not a love that was exclusive, and it was not a love that was, I'm not going to hurt you if you don't hurt me. It's a love, I'm going to treat you the way I want you to treat me. It's both active and positive. Take a closer look at this principle, the scope of this principle, for a moment. However, some versions have all things whatsoever. You want people to treat you, so treat them. So are there limits beyond which we're unwilling to go so far as treating other people with kindness, respect, and love? All things that we expect from others, we must extend to others. A primarily selfish viewpoint of life that focuses on my needs and my wants and how people should treat me and how I want or demand to be treated will do nothing to alleviate the polarization and the impasse we see in the world today. Now, I know there are concerns. I know there are legitimate concerns. But if I stand back and I say, well, I have not been treated right as a member of the society, as a member of my family, as a member of the church, and I stand back and say, you did not treat me right, and therefore I am going to throw a royal fit until you do, that's not going to solve a thing, is it? The language of the golden rule is such that when we understand it properly, we're no longer thinking about our rights and how we're being treated and all of that. We're thinking more in terms, what can I do to help others? If I want them to treat me this way, then I need to treat them this way. If I wait until you give me what I want, that is, until you meet my needs, until you give me everything I need emotionally and every other way, but I'm unwilling to initiate the process by meeting your needs, you have a recipe for stagnation, a recipe for polarization, a recipe for division and strife. We need to be willing to follow the golden rule. Often problems are exist because of this selfish attitude. When I've spoken not only publicly but also privately to people about their marriage, what I have said in the past is that the number one problem in marriage is not money. That's an easy cop-out. The number one problem in marriage is selfishness. Or you could summarize that as sin. That's very broad. But selfishness. I'm going to be treated the way I want to be treated. Okay? And I'm going to wait until you do that, and then we'll see if I reciprocate or not. The problem with that is it's often the case that we want to be treated better than we're willing to treat somebody else. And so the cycle goes on and on and on. The golden rule will not work unless we're willing to put all things whatsoever back into the program. Christ's principle of treating others the way we want to be treated is golden because of its scope. It goes beyond our natural inclination. It is not natural from an earthly point of view, from a physical point of view, to treat other people the way we want to be treated. The natural thing is not to do to them what we don't want them to do to us. But we're looking at Jesus. We're looking at his teaching, the scope of that principle. A second thing, besides this principle being golden in its scope, it is golden in its standard of measurement. In Luke chapter 6 and verse 31, the same thing is said, but a little bit different wording. Luke said, "And just as you want people to treat you, treat them in the same way." Just as is a comparative expression. It's a measurement. It's a standard. The practical standard of how we treat others is to be reflective about how we would like to be treated if we were walking in their shoes. Now, Christ's teaching is not so difficult to understand. Actually, much of it is pretty simple, really. It's a lot harder to put into practice, however. On a day-to-day basis, maybe Sunday afternoon, you can still remember the sermon and remember the text, and Monday morning or Monday afternoon, you begin thinking, what was it that I was supposed to do this week? Well, it's sometimes hard to put into practice, but it will pay a dividend if you do. We know about Christ. We know about this teaching. Now we need to apply it daily. Keep it before us. Memorize it. Put it on a refrigerator. Whatever it takes to keep this in mind. Jesus said, "If you know these things, you're blessed if you do them." Now that was in John chapter 13, where he had washed the feet of the disciples, demonstrating his humility and willingness to serve. It's good that you know this, but you got to do it, Jesus said. In James 4, verse 17, James says that he that knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. So how do we know what to do for others? Well, the standard is pretty simple. I mean, we could open the Bible and start looking at all those passages, but if you really want a quick reference guide, and that's sometimes what we want, you know, don't give me the long 30-page instruction manual how to set up a piece of equipment I bought. I want the one-page picture thing. One, two, three, you're ready to go. You know, that's kind of what I like. So if you don't, you need to study the long-term thing, the whole detailed process. But on the fly, when you need a quick reference guide, here's what you do. The standard is clear. Do for others just as you would have them do to you. That's easy to remember. Well, what would they want me to do for them? An example might be in 1 John chapter 3, verse 17. "Whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and in truth." Speaking about our relationship to one another in the body of Christ, and particularly if someone is without, then if we're without food and clothing, how would we want someone to treat us? If we were in their shoes, what would we want them to do for us? Now that might change our entire outlook on how we treat people, whether it's food and clothing or whether it's something else, and whether someone needs encouragement, they're discouraged, whatever it is, that we begin thinking about, what would I want? How would I want to be treated if I were, and fill in the blank, whether it's if I lost a loved one, if I had suffered a financial reverse, if I was in desperate straits emotionally, whatever it is, let me think about that for a moment. How would I want to be treated? And then answer that question. It really ought to change our whole focus on benevolence and doing things for people, because we'll put ourselves in their place as well. Let that be the standard of our conduct. In order to really make it a meaningful thing, and for us to really dig a little deeper into this, it might be good to look at the context of the Golden Rule and appreciate the context for a moment. Remember, every verse has its context. And so Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12 occurs in the overall context of Christ's ministry, in particular, his Sermon on the Mount. And as he's looking at these varied principles of effective living as being his disciple, in the early part of Matthew, in chapter 7 and verse 1, he says, "Do not judge so that you will not be judged. For the way that you judge, you will be judged, and by the standard of measure, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at that speck that is in your brother's eye and do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' and behold, the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye." Now think about that for a moment. That's one of the favorite passages of many people in the world today. But the point is, by what standard do we measure others? By the standard of the Golden Rule, or by the standard of hypocritical judgment? And I think that's what Jesus is talking about here, hypocritical judgment. He's not saying that no judgment is necessary. Sometimes we have to make judgments. But what he's talking about is judging someone by a different standard than we judge ourselves. So judging others by the standard we use in judging ourselves is nothing but the background for the Golden Rule. Because what we're doing is saying, I'm going to treat you the way I want to be treated. So I'm measuring it by myself. Just as if I was judging someone, I would not judge them without first looking to myself first. And then following that, right before the Golden Rule, he talks about the benevolent Father and the blessings that we enjoy because we are his children. "Ask, and it shall be given to you. Seek, and you shall find. Knock, and the door shall be opened unto you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened. For what man is there among you who, when his son asks for a loaf, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, he will not give him a snake, will he? If you, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give what is good to those who ask him?" Your Father in heaven, how does he bless in response to the needs of others? He is generous, he is giving, he is benevolent, and in that context, our willingness to practice the Golden Rule is related to our understanding of God. And that we give what is good. We give what is good. We give what is benevolent. We give to those who ask, and we do so from the standpoint of, how would I want to receive it if I were in his position? God's children are blessed beyond what we deserve. We do not treat others with contempt. We don't look down upon others when they have a need that we can meet. But rather, instead, we want to treat them as we would want to be treated. And so I can see the wheels can be spinning around on these subjects whenever we talk about this. Because it's all too often that as we seek to practice the Golden Rule, it puts us in jeopardy of being abused or being mistreated. I mean, people say, well, if he's going to do that, then he must be kind of a spineless little coward, you know, just treating people good all the time. You know, that's not macho at all. We ought to stand up for our own rights instead of doing that. Or someone might look at that and say, well, this person is treating others the way he wants to be treated, and so they might take advantage of that situation and that sort of thing. But you got to remember that we're here to follow Jesus. We're not here to please ourselves or to please the world. And to be an example for Christ, to be an influence in this world, we cannot be just like the world. We can't be like the world in our thinking. We cannot be like the world in our doctrine. We cannot be like the world in what we do day to day. We have got to be like Jesus in order to influence others. Now, Jesus said this also in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5. He said, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has become tasteless, how will it be made salty again? It's good for nothing other than to trample under the foot of man." Now, we got to be different. If we're not different, what good are we? And then it goes on, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do men light a lamp and put it under the peck measure, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." We're salt. We're light. What that means is there's a difference between us and the world. And you can say, well, what difference is that? And we could point out a few subtle differences in the way we worship and the way we do this or do that. But on a practical nature, in everyday living, the thing that distinguishes us is whether we are the salt or the light of the earth. If we are practicing the golden rule, that puts us on a different level, on a different plane, that people will notice, that people will see, and people will be influenced by that. One writer, in talking about salt and light, reminded us that salt stings an open wound and light exposes dirt. So if you're going to be the light of the world, you've got to be willing to pay the price. And that price is important. Unless the price is paid, souls will be lost. Unless the price is paid, the soul that may be lost may be our own. So we talked about the golden rule. We talk about its scope and we talk about its standard. But finally, let's talk about that it's golden in reference to its source. Where does it come from? After stating the golden rule, Jesus said, "This is the law and the prophets," meaning that this sums up everything. The very essence of human relationships is found in the golden rule. It's no wonder why Jesus quoted it in Matthew 22 and why it has been not just part of the law of Moses, but it's also part of the law of Christ and even clarified and strengthened under his law. There are other expressions like this. In Galatians 5, verse 14, Paul said, "For the whole law is fulfilled in one word." What word is that? "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." That's an expression, one word. Not one word literally, but one idea. Love your neighbor as yourself. James chapter 2, verse 8 says, "If, however, you are fulfilling the royal law according to the scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Again, the same idea is mentioned. And that goes back to Matthew 22, verses 37 through 39. Quoting from the book of Deuteronomy, he said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment." That's what Jesus was asked. What is the great commandment? It's kind of like we want to know, what is the one thing I need to do? And if you say that, you pretty much covered it all. Then he says, the second is likened to the first. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. The golden rule, we might say, is a second level in the sense that the first command, love the Lord your God with all your mind, heart, strength, and soul. The second, love your neighbor as yourself. But if you really love God with all your mind, strength, heart, and soul, won't you also love your neighbor as yourself? I think they go together, but yet he makes a distinction here. I think that is very, very important. Since the golden rule is second level command compared to the first and foremost command, the golden rule can never be practiced in such a way that dishonors God or makes him subservient to our will or puts other things or other people before him. It can't be done. God comes first in every respect, and our love finds its source in God. His nature is love. 1 John chapter 4, verse 7, beginning, "Beloved, let us love one another, For love is from God, and everyone who knows, who loves is born of God and knows God. The one who does not love does not know God, for God is love. By this, the love of God is manifested in us, that God has sent his only begotten Son into the world so that we might live through him. And this is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation, that is, sacrifice for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought to love one another. The golden rule finds its source in the love of God. Think of God's love for us. God's love is perfected in us when we think about the needs of others. That's what John is saying. When we practice the golden rule and we treat other people the way we want to be treated, that's practicing the love of God. And that's what he wants us to do in everyday life. And so however you want people to treat you, so treat them. For this is the law and the prophets. The golden rule, precious in its scope, in its standard, and in its source. But the true value, as we've seen, can only be appreciated when it's practiced in everyday life. Think about the golden rule in your relationship with your spouse. Why would it be that God would ask us to treat our neighbor that way if we will not treat our spouse in the same way? Think about the golden rule as it relates to the church and how we relate to one another in the body of Christ. Think about the golden rule as it pertains to society in which we live, how important it is. Think about the golden rule as it relates to our effectiveness in reaching out to the lost. It all begins with Calvary. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And that, my friends, is the golden text of the Bible, someone has said. Isn't it interesting that the golden rule is part of the, is related to that golden text of the Bible? There's so much in the Bible to be responded to. If you're ready to respond in faith and obedience to the gospel this morning, we want to make that opportunity available to you. If you're ready to put the Lord on in baptism, that you believe Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and you're willing to turn away from sin, confess his name, we're here to help you. In obedience to the gospel, your sins are washed away, you're raised to walk in newness of life. Or if you need the prayers of the church, we invite you to come while we stand and while we sing.